This is Digital Story Podcast number 747, July 14th, 2020. Today's theme is Comets, Night Sky, and More. I'm Derek Story. What a great time to be outside under the stars. If you're in North America, Jupiter and Saturn are both visible. The Milky Way is out, and as a bonus, Comet Neowise is now hanging out in the north right after sunset. So grab your binoculars, pack your camera, and let's have some fun. You don't even have to wear a mask. So this comet, Comet Neowise, really has been a delight. I mean, I don't think people really knew about it until March, and then suddenly, now they're saying this is a very visible comet. In fact, in some instances, you can see it with the naked eye and certainly can see it with binoculars, and our cameras will have no problem seeing it at all if we have good conditions. And so I'm pretty excited about this. Now, up until this point, up until really today, where I live in California, you had to get up in the wee hours of the morning to photograph it, which I don't mind. I mean, I'm an early guy. I get up pretty early. But when I read that, when we get to, you know, the 13th and the 14th and the 15th of July, then we can start to see it above the northern horizon, not too far above, 5 to 10 degrees, depending on where you are, above the northern horizon in the evening. In the evening, which I really like because, you know, I get up in the morning, I tend to do my work and do all that sort of stuff. And I can do all of that. I can do a full day's work, have everything ready to go, and then celebrate in the evening. Maybe get out there a little early, do a little twilight photography, which is always fun, right? Maybe shoot the comet if I can get a good angle on it, get a good view of it. And then just keep hanging out and see what else I find. You know, maybe I can get a good shot of the Milky Way. So I'm pretty jazzed about this because I have to tell you, I can't be the only person thinking, oh my God, I can't take another picture of the cat or the walk I do every day or, you know, this routine that, I mean, the rut that I am in during shelter in place in terms of the physical world out there is about 6 feet deep right now. Walking in it so much. I'm getting a lot done inside. I'm being productive. I'm doing all that stuff. That's great. Work, you know, I've been disciplined and focused and productive. Yay. But in terms of the stuff that I really like, in terms of getting out there and mixing it up in the city, doing some street photography or traveling or even going out to eat, you know, all that kind of stuff, no. It hasn't been any of it. And I really want to take a picture of something different than what I see every day. And I think this, this is a good opportunity. I don't even have to go very far. I'm scouting out some locations. Tomorrow night's going to be my first night. No, actually, tonight is going to be my first night because as you're listening to this, it's Tuesday. Yes. So, I mean, right now it's Monday for me. That's, you know, there's my head right there. Tomorrow night's going to be my first night. And then if it doesn't go as well as I want, or if I learn some things that I want to apply again, then I'm going to go out Wednesday night too. Supposed to have clear skies both nights up here in Northern California for this type of photography. The comet's going to be about 5 to 10 degrees above the horizon, so I need to find a good spot. I'm working on that right now. And I'm just going to get out and do some shots. I'm going to do some shots. Now, my view of the comet shot, for me anyway, and I have shot comets before. Hale Bopp, I shot Halley's Comet out in the desert, out of Joshua Tree, way back when with film, with Kodakolor, like something crazy, Kodakolor VR 400 or something like that. It's a very grainy shot, but it's sharp and it's actually quite beautiful. I still look at it sometimes. We got Joshua trees in the foreground, all that. I'm not going to go out to the desert for this, but I do have some good locations around here, scouting them out right now for tomorrow night. And then I'm going to go out and just see if I'm really lucky, if I have a great night when I go out. If I have a great night, I have the possibility of getting like two or three or four different shots in one photo shoot. I love that, especially after the drought that I've been in, you know, just in recent weeks. So I thought, okay, let's talk about this. Let's talk about, you know, how to prepare. Let's talk about, you know, what to look for. Because a lot of you, I'm sure, in the same boat as me, this might sound appealing. It's a different kind of assignment. It'd be fun if we could even compare shots. You know, if I get a shot and you get a shot and all that, maybe I'll do a Facebook post where we can compare shots. Well, let's see how it goes first. Right? And then we'll take it from there. So I've got five things that I have learned from doing these sort of shoots that I want to share with you right now. Really, I mean, a lot of this stuff you're going to probably already know. More what I'm trying to do today is just get you excited about going out and doing this and hoping that you will go out and do it if you have the opportunity to do so. All right, so here we go. First thing, don't forget your night sky binoculars. Now, photography is great. I love photography, but one thing I have learned about going out at night, whether it's a meteor shower or if I'm looking, you know, at an eclipse of the moon, whatever it happens to be, is that having some good binoculars helps in all sorts of different ways. For one thing, if you're going out with somebody else, they have something to do while you're taking pictures, which is always a really nice and considerate thing. Secondly, I like to use the binoculars to scan the sky and sort of find what I'm looking for, seeing what's out there before I start, you know, lining up the camera on the tripod and doing all that sort of fooling around stuff. And I say night sky binoculars because, you know, I have a couple different pairs of binoculars, but the ones that I like to use for stargazing, they let in a bit more light. You know, they're designed for this sort of viewing, and they're actually quite nice. They're actually quite nice. I've had them forever. That's the nice thing about binoculars. They last a long time. They really do. Especially if you get a good pair. So I just think that they're really helpful for, you know, figuring out what you want to do in the sky, for sharing the experience of somebody else. And then the other thing is that I don't like getting so caught up in taking pictures that I forget to enjoy the moment. And the binoculars really help me enjoy the moment. I can just sit down in my camp chair that I bring with me and point those binoculars up there and just enjoy being under the stars, looking at the planets, looking at the constellations, and whatever else I can find out there. So they're just really super handy, and almost to the point that I would say that if it were a choice between your camera and the binoculars, if you're one of those weird scenarios, you know, like a party game where, you know, you can only bring, you know, water or food kind of thing, I would almost be tempted to opt for the binoculars over the camera, just because if I'm looking for experience, the binoculars are going to really give me the experience. Now, the camera allows me to come away with memories, which I really like too. Fortunately, I don't have to choose. I'm going to bring both. But I really want to advocate for you to bring binoculars if you have them. They really enhance the experience. All right, second, get a good astronomy app. If you haven't used one lately, they have gotten so much better. They are great. The one I like is Stellarium, Stellarium. You can get it for my iPhone, for iPad. I have it on both. It's helpful for beforehand, for locating the comet in the night sky. So here's, you know, like, here's what I like to do with the app. And you can use it on the desktop too. In fact, I'll have a link to their browser version of it where you can go. You don't have to buy anything. But what you can do is you plug in your location. Like in my case, I put in Santa Rosa, California. And then it has a little timeline. And you can just move on the timeline. Like, for instance, I can start the timeline before it gets dark. And, of course, you don't see anything in the sky. And then just let it play out or just move it to right at twilight, then, you know, right after it's dark, and then on into the evening. And you can see how everything moves in the sky, just like you were really there. Super helpful for planning, you know, when you need to be there, how much time you need to allow to set up, all that kind of stuff. And it has Neowise in there. It has the comet in there. So you can see exactly how the comet kind of rises and then, you know, falls and all that kind of stuff. They are really helpful. And of course, while you're in the field, then you can just point it to the sky and you can actually, you know, see what's going on. So I really like a good astronomy app. Like right now, I like Stellarium. It's, you know, it's cool, but there are so many good ones. Get your hands on something. And beforehand, you know, the afternoon before you're going to go out or whatever, use the app to do a little planning. I always like to look and see what constellations are around the area I need to be looking for, all that kind of stuff. Like, for instance, it's the north for the comet, you know, and it's actually below the Big Dipper, I believe, as I recall from looking at the star map. You know, get it all dialed in before you leave. And then have the app with you when you're there. It just makes the experience not only more efficient, but more enjoyable. Plus, you can see where Saturn is. You can see where Jupiter is. You get to see all the constellations. You get to see where the Milky Way is coming in. And once you get your bearings looking at the sky, and, you know, and you're looking at this, you know, you're just like, oh, yeah, there's that, there's that, there's that. It's really fun. So I highly recommend, by the way, if you get Stellarium Plus, I think they call it, it's $9.99. It's far better than the $2.99 version, I think, anyway, and it's worth the extra money. But there are other ones as well. Whatever you like or already have, just make sure you get it dialed in, do a little research before you head out, and then have it with you when you're out in the field. All right, now let's talk about your camera kit, number three. So I'm going to take basically two lenses. I'm going to take, first of all, for the camera, I'm going to take the OMD EM1 Mark II, a great camera for this kind of work. I'm going to take the Olympus Pro, the 40 to 150 millimeter f2.8, and then I'm going to take a 12 millimeter lens also. So if I am in a nice spot that, you know, and I want a nice big view of the sky or a little bit more landscape in the foreground or whatever, I want that 12 millimeter too. But I really only need those two lenses, the 12 millimeter and then the 40 to 150. And then, of course, I'm going to bring a tripod as well. Even if you have the Mark III, bring a tripod, okay? If you don't want to use it and you want to use the handheld star thing, that's great. Have a tripod in the car, just in case, alrighty? Now, for this shot, I don't want star trails, you know? So I want to make sure that my exposure is short enough so I don't create star trails. So I'm going to use what they call the 500 rule to help me determine the maximum shutter speed. And basically, the way that works, it's 500 divided by the true focal length of the lens. So if I'm shooting with the 40 millimeter on the 40 to 150, I'm shooting at the 40 millimeter end, the math would work like this. 500 divided by 80, right? Because the true focal length is going to be 80, you know, crop sensor times 2. So 500 divided by 80 equals 6.25 seconds. Therefore, the maximum shutter speed that I can use before the stars start to blur a bit is 6 seconds. 6 seconds, okay? Now, the wider the lens, the longer, you know, you can have the shutter open, right? So for, like, with a 12 millimeter, I easily go up to 10 seconds. No problem with a 12 millimeter. But the 40, I'm going to be at 6 seconds. And if I zoom in more, then I got to recalculate because my exposure could get as short as 2 or 3 seconds, depending on how tight I frame this whole thing. Now for the ISO, I'm going to start at 1600 and sort of see what happens from there. Obviously, I'm going to have the aperture wide open at f2.8 or f2 for the 12 millimeter, f2.8 for the 40 to 150. Then, you know, you do a little trial and error, just do a little experimentation. If you start with those settings, if you get your shutter speed correct, that really helps, because then all you have to do, you know, your aperture is already wide open anyway, so then all you really have to do is adjust ISO until you get where you want to go with it. That's what I'm going to do. I don't want Star Trails, because my vision is, if I'm lucky enough to get this comet, my vision is to have a nice crisp sky, right, with the comet. And then a little bit of foreground. I hope I find a pretty place. And I'm actually going to focus on the stars. That's how I'm going to focus, you know, manually. I'm going to focus on the stars. If you have the EM1 Mark III or the EMX, it will do star focus for you. And that works really well. I don't have it. I had to send the three back. But I still have my two. And so I'll just focus on the stars manually, and I'll be in business there. So that's how I'm going to approach the photography end of this equation. And like I said, I want pictures. I want some different pictures, but I also want to enjoy the experience too. It's going to be a combination of going back and forth between the camera and the binoculars while I'm out there. All right, here's the next thing. This is such a big thing for me. A flashlight with a red filter. And if you don't have one, you can make one. But that red filter is so helpful. And a headlamp that goes to red filter. You know, my headlamp has a bright white light. It has a dimmer white light. I think it has a flashing white light. And it has a red light. And the red one is what you really want, because it helps preserve your night vision. And, you know, when you're constantly out there scanning the sky and everything, once you get to night vision stage, which takes a few minutes, you know, for you to really start to see things, then I don't like giving that up. And, you know, so if I have to dig around in my bag for something, or if I go back to the car to get something, whatever, I want to make sure I don't lose my night vision in that process by using a white light. So a flashlight with a red filter, or a headlamp that, you know, the LED headlamps that go to red, something like that. And you can configure something ahead of time if you don't have something right now ready to go. It really helps a lot, honestly. It does help a lot. And, you know, it helps you hang on to that night vision. And it's such a beautiful thing when that sky finally opens up to your eyes and you really feel like you're seeing everything. Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And then the last thing is find a good location. Yes, you can take a few steps out to your backyard if you have the right view and you don't have too much light pollution. But remember, this comet is hanging low. You know, if you hold your fist out and you measure, you know, the bottom of your fist from the earth to the top of your fist, the comet's not going to get any higher than the top of your fist. Okay, that's not very high. And so who knows what sort of atmospheric stuff is happening in that, you know, that 0 to 10 degrees zone there. It really pays to get somewhere that's as dark as possible, that has as little light pollution as possible. And then also, it's just sort of nice to have something that makes a nice, you know, you don't need very much land there, but since the comet's going to be so close to the landmass, you want something maybe with some nice little silhouettes of trees or a little activity there. You know, if there's something glowing, that's always kind of cool. So the location's actually quite important to really get the shot, you know, that you want. And like I said, you don't have to go out to Joshua Tree Desert like I did for Halley's Comet way back when. But you do want to scout something in your area that at least gives you a reasonable chance of getting a good comet shot. Now, while you're out in your good location, it pays to be comfortable there, because if you're comfortable, you'll stay longer. You'll stay longer. So I have some really nice Coleman camp chairs that I like, and, you know, little cup holders and little table that comes out. You know, they're really comfortable and sturdy. And a blanket, just a camping blanket for my legs. It's really extends the amount of time I can sit out there. So, you know, I've done some shots. I want to see what happens. You know, I can sit in the chair with the binoculars, maybe have a little hot coffee or something while I'm doing that. The whole experience is better. You don't want to have to go back into the car. First of all, there's a chance that a light will come on. You really don't want that. And it's different in the car than it is, you know, sitting out under the stars. So, if you can bring something so that you're comfortable while you're out there as well, I think it'll extend the amount of time you stay, and you know, increase your odds of getting not only good photos, but increasing your odds of capturing good memories as well. So those are my thoughts. You know, I just really want to get you jacked up for this comment. Those of you that have access to it, because I think it's a great shoot for us right now. And especially with so many other things going on in the sky at the same time. So don't forget your night sky binoculars. Get a good astronomy app. Pack your camera kit and be ready with your settings. Figure out your settings ahead of time. Bring a flashlight with a red filter and find a good location and bring your blankie. Have a great time. And then we will reconvene on our Facebook page. I'll put a post on in the next day or two. And of course, there'll be a post for this podcast. And then if you have any contributions or anything that you want to share from your experience, I want you to do that because I love seeing that stuff. Alrighty. Let's go get them. Let's go shoot that comet. The Sony A7S Mark III, the Canon R5, and the Canon R6. I really feel like I need to mention these cameras. I mean, they really caused, especially the Canon R5 and R6, which have been announced. We're waiting for the announcement on the Sony A7S Mark III. It's going to be a competitor to the R5 and R6. So Full Frameville right now is a very happening place. It's a hot kitchen, isn't it? If you're shooting full frame. You know, just to refresh your memory, I'm sure everyone that's listening to this podcast knows about the R5 and the R6. This is a pretty high stakes game we're talking about right here. The R5, the Canon R5 with the RF 24-105 F4L zoom lens will cost $4,999. It's on pre-order right now. That gets you the 45 megapixel full frame CMOS sensor, 8K 30 raw, 4K 120 10-bit internal video, so 4K at 120 frames per second, wowzers. And of course, sensor shift 5-axis image stabilization built right into the camera. So that plus the lens will cost you $4,999. And the lens is a very good lens, as are basically all of the Canon RF lenses. Now, the R6 is very interesting and could be quite comfortable for some in our audience because that's a 20 megapixel camera, still full frame. You still get 4K video at 60 FPS, and then full HD, 120 frames per second, 10-bit internal video. And you still get the sensor shift, 5-axis image stabilization. But with the 24-105, the RF 24-105 F4L lens, that one costs $3,599, which is substantially different than $4,999. Both are a lot of money, but you know, it's basically a $1,400 difference between the two there. Canon has announced that shipment of the cameras and the lenses and the accessories for those who didn't order right away, maybe a little bit longer than they thought because the pre-ordering has been so brisk. People are lining up for this camera. I think people who shoot Canon, this is the camera they've been waiting for. When I say the camera, either the R5 or the R6, depending on what your megapixel needs are. There are some other differences. The electronic viewfinder is different between the two, and as is the LCD, but you know, they're both very good, just one is better, you know, all those sort of things. But I think this is really the camera that Canon full frame shooters have been waiting for, and when Canon announced it, they just lined up and said, yes, I want it, I'm gonna buy it. Along the same lines, Sony is not resting on its laurels, nor can it afford to, because you know, Canon has really upped its game here. I mean, Sony has sort of had its way for a while in the full frame world, and that's no longer the case after the R5 and the R6. So I'm very curious to see what the A7S Mark III is going to look like. It's supposed to be a video beast as well. We'll see if it can, you know, have the same, you know, 8K, 30 frames per second RAW that the Canon R5 has. But I'm sure it's going to be a very impressive camera as well. So if you're a full frame shooter, then you have lots to choose from. One thing I want to note about all of this, remember when I was saying that I really felt like Panasonic needs to stay in the Micro Four Thirds game if it wants to stay in the photography game as a whole. And after seeing this announcement with the two Canon cameras and probably what I'm going to see with the new Sony camera, I have to say that is as true as it's ever been, because as good as the Panasonic camera is, and any of you out there that own it, I am not dissing it at all, because I shot with it, I reviewed it, and I know it's a very good camera. I just really feel like that Canon has a full head of steam right now. Sony is not taking its foot off the pedal, and then we haven't even seen what Nikon is going to do yet, and they're working on something as well. I just feel like it's going to be tough sledding for Panasonic in the full frame field. They will, I'm sure, have a niche audience, but this is tough stuff to compete with. I mean, really, this is tough stuff. So that's just sort of a mini update on what's going on in full frame. I know a lot of us are shooting Micro Four Thirds or APS-C, and we sort of look at the full frame thing as like, wow, look at those numbers. But I also know that many folks here also shoot with the full frame. And if you do, I'm excited for you, because you truly have some interesting and powerful cameras to choose from. Review the TDS show on Apple Podcasts. I haven't talked about this for a while, but I've noticed that the reviews for the Digital Story Podcast on Apple Podcasts, some of them are getting a little long in the tooth. We haven't had a new one for a while. And so this is an ask. This is an ask by me that if you like the show, if you enjoy the show, and you haven't done a review on Apple Podcasts, and you use Apple Podcasts to listen to the show, I would so appreciate you taking a few minutes, giving it a star review, and then just saying a few words about what you like about this podcast. Because, you know, it's really helpful for people that come to the show either through search or some other way. And, you know, one of the challenges that I always have, that I'm always aware of, is that we want to keep this audience growing. We want to keep it fresh. We want to get new people coming in, because when new people come in, it just, you know, adds new blood and invigorates the entire community. It's super helpful. And the best way for new people to come in is that when they see this podcast on search, and we show up on search nicely on Apple Podcasts, you know, we're listed in the top 25 if you search on photography, we're listed in the top 20 if you search on photo, we're listed in like the top 5 if you search on digital photography. So we will show up on search, but when they see us on search, when we do show up, it's really helpful to have fresh reviews there, so they go, oh yeah, this is a happening thing, I'm going to give it a try. And that's all I'm asking new folks to do, is just give us a try and see what you think. So if you have the time and the inclination, if you don't mind posting a review so we can freshen that up a bit, I would truly appreciate it. Ripping and cataloging audio CDs is now available for Inner Circle members. This is a fun title, and I know that generally speaking, we talk more about photography than we do audio, but you also know that I love music, I love audio. This podcast is an audio endeavor for me, and I wanted to do this title and the other two companion titles with it. And now that it's posted for our Patreon members, it's free for Patreon members, I have to say that I learned a lot. So it's a 40-minute video, and it shows you easy ways to incorporate your audio compact discs into your existing digital music library. And we use iTunes/Apple Music app for Mac or Windows. Remember, it's on both platforms to do this because, first of all, it does a good job. It's easy. It has the options that I need. And then once you've ripped it, once you've created the files for your digital music library, then it's cataloged automatically. And we make sure that that happens cleanly by the way that we add metadata. I talk about metadata and managing metadata and all that sort of stuff, and that's really what makes the library process go so well. CDs are the easiest way to add, you know, what we call vintage music to our digital music libraries. You know, the vinyl and the cassette tapes are harder because CDs, the metadata is filled in for you, which is sweet. On the other two, you have to fill that in yourself, which is a little bit more work. So if you have CDs and you're not listening to them because you don't want to fool around with a CD player and you would rather have them in your digital music library where you can listen to them on your iPhone, your iPad, whatever smartphone that you happen to use, on your computer, on your stereo system, on your Apple TV, whatever you're using, then this is a terrific title. I think you're really going to enjoy it. It's free to Patreon members. So if you're a Patreon member, all you have to do is go over to our Patreon site, our Inner Circle site, and the information will be right there. The link will be there, and the password will be there, and you can watch it right away. And hopefully, you know, start listening to some of that music that maybe you haven't listened to in a while because it's not in an easily consumable form. Now, if you want it for free, you can get it for free in the sense that, I mean, if you're a Patreon member, if you sign up to be a Patreon member, then you will get it as a bonus. Let's put it that way. I think that's more accurate, don't you? You will get it as a bonus. All you have to do is click on the tile that's on every page of the digital story. There's a Patreon tile there. Go over there. Become an Inner Circle member. It's $5 a month. Believe me, you get a lot of stuff for that, and you support the show. The next thing that's going to come out is going to be archiving vinyl, digitizing archiving vinyl. And that, my friends, is a wild ride. And that'll be out sometime next week. Next week, yeah. And then after that, we'll do cassette tapes. This is also my thank you to our Inner Circle members for supporting this show. I hope you enjoy ripping and cataloging audio CDs. It's a good little movie. And I hope it inspires you to maybe start accessing some of the music you haven't listened to in a while. I want to thank our friends at Red River Paper for supporting this show. I did a piece, by the way, on Sunday about using non-Canon ink. Yeah, because I finally said, you know, I print a lot of snapshots. I do a lot of cards using Red River paper. And I print a lot of, you know, stuff like, you know, labels for the camera shop with my smaller Canon, my Canon Pixma. And I thought, why am I paying for Canon ink for that? I'm okay with paying for Canon ink for my big 13-inch printer that I do archival stuff on. But for my little everyday workhorse that I'm cranking out snapshots and labels and stuff, why am I paying for Canon ink? So I decided to try third-party ink. I tested it, and I wrote an article about it. It's on the digital story right now. You ought to take a look at it. You will save tons of money, and the prints look fantastic. Of course, part of the reason is they're on Red River paper. Red River paper. They are the longest-running sponsor of the digital story. They have a tile on every page of the digital story. You click on that tile, takes you to their site where you can learn about paper, all the accessories that you need, reviews and tutorials. The combination of Red River paper and for my multifunctional printer using these third-party inks is really a great combination, and it makes printing affordable, super, super affordable. So affordable, you're not even thinking about making a print. You just do it. You go, bam, I'm going to do this because it's so cheap compared to when you're using the ink that is the brand of your printer. So check it out. Check out the article and then click on the tile for Red River Paper. Check out what they're doing. Start making some prints. And then also check out their Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you get outside and see the big show, the Comet Show. Then come back and join me next week. Lots of stuff going on. Until then, have a great week. Stay safe. Bye-bye now.